Today's program is proudly brought to you by Culture City, a for-purpose organization that provides a place of acceptance and support for all autism families. For more information, visit culturecity.org.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. Happy Sunday. My name is Philip Gilmore. This is the main course without Patrick Martins. And also today, we are also without my co-host, Alexa McLaughlin. She's on vacation or somewhere, something exciting like that. In studio today, we have Justin Warner, iconic chef in my eyes. He's the winner of the Food Network Star eighth season. Was it the eighth season?
Yeah,
hard to believe. And he's here this week. I guess you have a book coming out.
It came out already. Yeah.
It's, wow.
It's crazy.
It's selling like hotcakes, I imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, like hotcakes with gold leaf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know Justin, he in my eyes was a pioneer. He opened up a great restaurant years ago in Bed-Stuy called Do or Dine. When I first ate there, it was one of those restaurants that I was so excited to eat at about a month before I went there, and it kind of changed my life and the way I thought about food. And I'm so happy to have you in the studio.
Thanks. Welcome. That was all. I mean, if that was not accurate, it was all very charitable. Thank you.
Oh yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So how's your week going?
Pretty chill. And by chill, I mean busy, but it's, you know, I'm doing a lot of stuff for this book to kind of get it in the right people's hands and make it come to a beautiful blossoming fruition. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never done anything like it before.
Well, I've been reading some of your blogs and some of the, you know, reviews on the books and some of the things. And I think right off the bat, I want to ask a question that I think a lot of people are thinking but not asking, which is, do you believe in aliens?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah,
good. I just
do.
Want to be, you know, you heard it here first. Yeah, I know it's all on our minds. Yeah.
No, that's a great question. I think, you know, as like a food personality, the number one question people ask is like, what would your last meal be? And I always say my executioner. But yeah, aliens. I think that's something fun to talk about. And I think that we should all, I mean, I think that our relationship with Earth and food would be better if we understood that we're not the only things here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. I actually sometimes people ask me, you know, like what inspired you to open your own restaurant, and I kind of say it jokingly. So you know people always ask you these generalized questions.
Oh, yeah,
like
of course.
And like how, I don't know, but so my kind of go-to thing is like I tell people that I started my own restaurant because I eventually want to own a cave and I would like to open a restaurant on the moon. So you know, when the technology comes available to actually open a restaurant on the moon, it they're not going to get somebody that had their first restaurant on the moon. So I want to open restaurants now, so when it becomes available, I'm at the top of the heap of the list to open a restaurant on the
That's
moon.
Very, very smart.
Yeah.
Imagine how easy service would be, you know, with such little gravity. You know?
Yeah.
You could just, flick a wine glass and it would go flying across the room.
Wait, isn't it, was it like the Alinea guy or Heston Blumenthal or somebody that wanted to, they tried to make like this like zero gravity like dessert bubble that would just, you know, they just bring it over to your table and had like, you know, what's it like, zero buoyancy, like it would sink or swim with helium.
That was maybe Grant Achatz from Alinea. who knows? I mean, I think also at Morimoto they have a floating plate.
Really?
Yeah, it's like a super cooled thing with like liquid nitrogen and I don't know, somehow it turns into a magnet. But it can only hold, like, the weight of, like, one teeny tiny cracker.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of liquid nitrogen, did you hear the story about this? I think it was, I want to say England, but they were serving Jägermeister with liquid nitrogen. And some, I think it was like supposed to be in it, and somehow it got inside of it, and the girl drank it.
Wow.
And it actually froze her stomach, and they had to remove her stomach.
Wow, geez. I mean, Jägermeister. We all make mistakes.
Liquid nitrogen.
Jesus.
Yeah, I guess when you when you see people playing with the liquid nitrogen and they're wearing those shoulder length gloves. That's a real thing. I mean, like one drop of liquid nitrogen on your skin is gonna ruin your week.
Yeah, pretty scary stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know. I feel like we see liquid nitrogen used so much in TV and videos, and I think that. We have this, the general public has this kind of misconception that stuff is, it's just okay.
Yeah.
I've watched somebody do it on a reality cooking show. Yeah, you need to take precautions with that stuff. It's terrifying.
I got exposed to it early because I actually live in, I live in South Florida. I live about an hour and a half south of Cape Canaveral. Mm. And so, in grade school, it'd be, there's a 50-50 chance during grade school or even middle school that you're going to go to, Cape Canaveral this year. They do the, big field trips. And they always did this thing where they had, I guess it would be liquid oxygen. I think that the space shuttle runs on. It's one of the two. That's what they run on. So they'd always do these experiments where they take like a balloon and dip it in there and then drop it.
Right.
Or like, bouncy ball, whatever. So that's kind of cool. Have you played a lot with liquid nitrogen?
Just a little bits here and there. I mean, I know, I understand its point.
Yeah.
But to me, it's just like, I'll just use my silly little ice cream machine that makes too much noise.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good. When in a pinch and when you need to, but I don't know, it's just not my jam.
Yeah, I've seen them on TV, but the anti-griddle.
Oh yeah,
those are fun.
Yeah, every time I'm on a show where there is an anti-griddle, I always put something on it regardless if it's for my dish or not for my dish.
Yeah.
I just do it because it's there and I don't have one.
I want to do something with like canola oil and an anti-griddle.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, why not? Just make a frozen slick.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
So Let me ask you a question. How long have you known that you wanted to be a chef? Like, were you cooking when you were 5 years old? Obviously, you have a love for food, so as I think everybody does, or in some degree. But like, were you the kid when you were 5 years old that were in the kitchen experimenting, or did it come later?
That's a great question. I didn't really know that until writing my book. That I was always kind of this person.
Yeah.
But as I was writing the book, you have to really talk about where a lot of your food memories come from, your association with a lot of things. And I realized that I have a ton of food memories from when I was a kid that are weird. Like my editor didn't believe it. Like, what do you mean you were three and you were ordering squid? And I was just like, well, I actually remember because I thought I was going to get in trouble. Like, I thought my mom would yell at me for, getting the waiter.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want those rings. And my friend had, a big bowl of squid and, some sauce or whatever. And I was like, rings, rings, rings. And so, I mean, if I was eating squid at three, I guess you could say that I was, a little bit into it. And then I found my first cookbook, and I was like, wow, that's, I must have been six. And I was making dips and stuff.
Mm.
And I mean, I guess most kids aren't cooking at six. I mean, dips aren't really cooking. You're just mixing sour cream and a bunch of spices together.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that I was going to be known for cooking, but I've always really been into it. I kind of just fell into the back of house life and food creativity when I opened Do or Dine and when I started trying out for these shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting that you say... that you are this person, from writing the book. It's I wouldn't even think about it, but I guess it's not just recipes. It's really this is going to represent at this point, this is up to this point in your life, this represents who you are as a person. And then also to the forward, how many pages is the forward?
I don't know. Alton Brown wrote the forward, so it's
all right, not the forward, but is I'm sorry, not the forward, the
introduction.
The introduction.
Oh, it's massive.
Oh, okay, cool.
So yeah, it's divided up into segments of if you care, like, read it. If you don't, skip it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
But it also serves as like a mini biography.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like a 100% of who you are. Yeah.
Totally.
It's interesting. You brought up a memory of mine, which was, I'm actually 43 now, but, it was probably, I don't know, I was probably about 24 or 25. I kind of already dropped out of college twice and trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And I was kind of exploring with, you know, psychedelic drugs and psychology and, you know, like reading things and trying to kind of almost like figure out who I was as a person. But I remember kind of asking my mom's questions about, you know, what was I like when I was, you know, 2 and 3 years old. And she tells me this story about we're on vacation in Florida. And I'm like 2.5 years old and I'm kind of walking like 15, you know, 20 feet in front of my mom and dad. And there's this couple that are sitting on the beach on a blanket and they have some like little fruit and snacks outside. And they kind of have like a romantic picnic. And I just, I kind of run up to them and I stick my hand out and I say, hi, I'm Philip. And I shake their hands. And then I sit down and I start eating their food. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, that reminds me of somebody that's kind of, I guess that's actually me. So
that's great.
Yeah. Kind of like, you know, kind of a, you know, big thing, like finding out who I am is who I've always been, kind of, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's totally it. And it's, I think it's weird when you have these kind of those wow moments. I definitely went through a phase. I was living in Colorado and I wasn't going to college, but I went through a phase where I was definitely doing this soul, like, you know, who am I sort of thing.
Where were you in Colorado?
I was in Fort Collins, Boulder, Denver.
I moved here from Boulder.
Oh, really? Nice. Yeah. I used to work at Sushi Toro on 10th and Pearl.
Oh, my, yeah, I love that place. What years were you there?
I want to say, gosh, I, you know, 2004, 2003 to like 2007?
Did you eat at a place called The Sunflower on Pearl Street?
Oh, my God, yeah, all the time.
I was the head waiter, the first head waiter.
No way, really?
Yeah, in like 98.
Yeah, totally, dude. Yeah. Of course. I mean, The Sunflower was legendary.
Yeah, it was great. It kind of went through a few incarnations, but the original one was great because it was a vegan fine dining restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they spent so much money. They had like, you know, it was like $800 a week on flowers. They just gave somebody this, you know, ton of money to do feng shui, but it was great because it was the base was vegan, so there's like a $19 tempeh scallopini dish.
Wow.
But then also too, it was also kind of like macrobiotic, you know, pre-paleo, but paleo. They would, every night they would have one fish and one poultry.
Mm.
It's kind of neat though, because, you know, you'd get this like $30, you know, duck breast or goose breast or something, but it would, everything else on the plate would be vegan.
Right. Yeah. I'm into it. The best part about Boulder is that you can pretty much do whatever you want there, providing that you do it on like just the small enough scale to serve the like percent of a percent that in Boulder that is into it.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's it.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that even though it's kind of like, kind of sells itself as this hippie place, it's also like there's a lot of like rich hedonistic
people. Oh my
god, there.
There's so much like techie type money in there now. Yeah. And I remember serving
the pop mafia.
Yeah, it's true. It is really true. There's so much money there. I remember serving the guy who invented Crocs. And I was just like, wow, balling out. You know, like, you invented a rubber shoe that Mario Batali wears, and now you're rich.
That's really funny.
Good job.
Almost similar. Yeah, so kind of on the same note, this girl I knew was nannying, and she had to run up to the house, and nobody was there. So this house that this guy was building, and it was like, it was pretty much the sickest house I've ever seen in my life. But it was the guy who invented RockShox.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, RockShox. Yeah. Remember, I had this on my Gary Fisher.
That's really funny. It's really funny. So do you have any? I'm having brain farts today. You didn't go to culinary school?
No, I didn't. I didn't go to any school. I barely made it out of high school. I'm just not really the kind of person that. Well, I think now I am. Now I'm the kind of person that could sit through college or lectures, but I don't know. I just couldn't.
About food, though.
Yeah, I mean, it would probably be about food. Actually, I'd love to go into like marketing, advertising. I love that sort of thing.
Yeah. Now.
I know, it just fascinates me. But yeah, so I just, I've been working in restaurants since I was like 14,
yeah,
bussing tables. And then I just kept doing it. Like, I can't tell you when the last time I wasn't working in a restaurant. I want to say maybe I was like 17. I took some time off and I worked in a machine shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I ran a punch.
I had a meltdown in San Francisco in like, I don't know, 97. And I was like, you know, I got to get my life together. I'm not going to work in restaurants. And I worked at like a temp company for tech companies. So, you know, like, you know, answering the phones and calling. And I'm like, I made it for about a day and a half. I'm like, you know, because I'm used to working at bars. So I'm like, you know, it's been like 2 days and nobody's like gotten in a fight and
yeah.
Nobody's yelling or nobody's lifting their shirts up or, you know, nobody's done anything crazy. I'm like, this is not for me.
Yeah. Restaurants are like, I wish they'd take the formula. Have you ever seen the show Grey's Anatomy? This is terrible.
No.
Well, okay, so the show...
I know of it.
Yeah, my wife watches the show Grey's Anatomy a lot, and so every now and then I'll, like, kind of get sucked into, like, one plot line, you know?
Yeah.
I'm, like, playing Game Boy or something next to her, and she's just buzzing through these episodes. And but anyway, I wish they would take the formula for Grey's Anatomy, which is, like, very serious, but also very much like a soap opera, and do it about a restaurant.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, in a restaurant or at a bar, you know, yeah, if there isn't a meltdown or someone isn't, like... You know, close to death. You know, like, yeah. it's not really real.
I haven't seen blood in over 4 days. Something's wrong.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I feel like Grey's Anatomy, every single episode, it's set in Seattle. And like every single episode, there's like a major disaster or yeah. 17 car pileup.
Yeah.
But I feel like also at a restaurant, you have the script for all of that sort of stuff, you know?
Since I haven't seen Grey's Anatomy, maybe you can answer this question. Do they use the term the weeds?
Oh, no. They don't.
I'm in the weeds.
But I'm obsessed with industry-specific jargon, you know? And so they say scrub in.
Yeah.
And so, like, when my employees at Dude Dine were showing up late, I'm like, you better scrub in.
Scrub in. I love it. Yeah. That's really funny. Or like, you're like, you know, some dishwasher prep cook gets there, changes his shoes,
yeah.
You know, takes his shirt off, puts his shirt on, and then goes to touch the food, scrub in.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
Love it. I love it. I'm going to use it. Totally stealing it. Let's turn the clock back a few years, Justin. So how did you come about owning your own restaurant in Bedford-Stuyvesant?
Too many beers. So I was working at the Modern with this dude, Luke Jackson, and one of my pals from Colorado, George McNeese. And we were all kind of shift drink buddies. Yeah. And we were always in the weeds together, you know? And yeah. So it was kind of this, like, brothers in arms.
And what were you doing at the Modern?
I was a captain there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that was...
captain, my captain.
Yeah, right. It's a captain, for those of you who don't know, is kind of like a boss waiter. I used to call it a shit goalie. You just stand in front of the fan.
Yeah.
And keep the shit from hitting it.
I literally used to work at I used to work at a restaurant in Palm Beach. It was a private dining club called the Poinciana Club, and they literally had stripes.
Oh, for
they
the
literally
captains.
Had yeah, they had like it was like Love Boat, you know, the short sleeve the short sleeve white shirts, and they actually had the bars, and it was like busser runner 1, back waiter 2, and then captain had 3.
That's amazing.
And, yeah, and the first year I was there, I was like, you know, only had 1 stripe, and I made it up to 3 stripes. I'm like, yes.
Oh, hell yeah. That must have felt great.
Yeah.
Was side work like swabbing the deck and stuff?
Oh, no, there was no deck. It was just the shirt, you know.
But. Oh, got it. Nautical. I love that sort of thing. Yeah, so anyway, I was a captain there, and we would get drinks and hang out and meet other people's friends. And so I met one of Luke's friends. His name is Perry. And actually, we were all here at Roberta's talking about restaurants, and Eric Repair was sitting next to us, and we were like, Jesus
God,
Christ.
He's so fucking good looking.
Oh my God. And just to like to be in this vicinity, I feel more good looking, just like some of his good lookingness is reflecting off of me.
Yeah. But yeah, if you're near Eric Repair, his pheromones actually make you live longer and look better.
Yeah, I went home and my girlfriend was like, ooh. You know? Yeah.
They were married the next
day. Yeah, a single silver hair fell upon me. Anyway. But we were like, Jesus, like, man, look at Roberta's, Christ, you know, they're out here, and, you know, Roberta's at that time wasn't as, like, built out as it was now, and we were like...
They probably didn't even have, yeah, Tiki Bar, just this little area next to the studio, right?
Yeah, and so we were like, look at this, like, if they can do it, we can do it, like, let's be the Bushwick of, or Roberta's of Do or Dine, Bed-Stuy and blah, 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 blah. Let's do it. And let's get all the cool famous people to come in, like Eric Repair. Like, wow. And we'll make cool, fun food just like everyone else is. And it'll be great. And so, I don't know, like, that was just, like, the tipping point beer where it stopped being this, like, mug dream and turned into a real thing. And so we found a space and we kept going at it and we found some funding and we kept going at it. It wasn't really enough. We hadn't, wasn't enough space, wasn't enough funding, but we put it together and one thing led to another. And then we didn't have enough money to hire a cook. So my partner, George, and I stepped up and said, look, until we can hire someone real, we'll step in. And then we opened and we had $2,000 of operating capital, which I'm sure you can do the math is yeah. suicidal.
Yeah.
And somehow we made it. And I got kind of on the PR train and just ran my big fat mouth on the Twitter. And I don't know, sooner or later, important people started showing up and eating the food.
Yeah.
And we were kind of connected in the wine world from the modern. So we knew like a bunch of wine junkies and people were excited to be able to bring all their great wines or whatever they had stolen from their respective restaurants.
Were you BYOB in the beginning?
Yeah, we were, which was actually like a very scary thing because we we got raided. We were hit with a multi-agency reaction to a community hotspot, which is called the March inspection.
Yeah.
And so
was it the full fire department, health department, DMV,
oh, man,
all of it?
Dude, yeah, it was like the Avengers, Shield, yeah. Justice League, yeah. X-Men,
yeah,
shit, yeah, it was brutal.
Wow, that's fun.
Yeah, it was like I've never felt so embarrassed, nervous, humiliated, scared in all my life.
Actually, me and the two of the guys that own Roberta's here, we used to work at a bar called Royal Oak, and this is like 2004, way back when. And it was like when it first opened, it was like, you know, obviously Williamsburg 11 years ago is a different time and place, but like this place was so hot that like Paris Hilton was there the opening night. Mm-hmm. And it was like really, I don't, it was either pissing off the Italian neighbors or the few big bars and restaurants that lived around there, it was taking business away from them. Somebody somewhere got pissed off, but they did the full Monty. That was literally the health department, fire department, police department, the ATF.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember they were there for like 5 hours. And I remember that, well, like one of the tickets, there was like multiple tickets. One of the tickets though is that they had for the space, and it's a huge space. It was like, you know, 2,000 square feet. They had one too many candles for the square footage. And I'm talking about like not candelabras or chandeliers. I'm talking about like votives. The votive. Yeah. There was one too many for the square. And he got like a $500 ticket.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is New York is a very big machine and it runs on a very expensive fuel. And it is our tears, sadness, and money.
Why do you think that happened? Do you think, was it a specific person? Or do you, in retrospect, is there a conspiracy theory that you have in your mind?
No, I mean, here's the thing. Look, we opened a restaurant that had Escalades pulling up to it within 2 weeks. And we did it on a weird no-name block in Bed-Stuy.
Oh.
And we also, like,
It's the fucking church lady.
Yeah, our only signage and whatever. And so I think people thought that we were running a front. And yeah. So when they came in with like the automatic weapons and stuff, I think that they knew that
they had automatic weapons.
Oh, hell yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I was like in Kevlar and everything, and I was like kind of excited, but also terrified. I was just like,
oh, that's so fucking.
It makes total sense because, like, what if we were running some sort of like illegal drug den illicit thing?
There's prostitution and gambling in the basement, 100%. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. You have to be prepared for some sort of firefight. Yeah. And so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, okay. So they have a $15 salad and there's Escalades out front. Okay. And chauffeurs. There's chauffeurs and Escalades. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. It was bananas. Yeah. It's like, here's our foie gras donut. We're so sorry.
Yeah. It's a no-brainer. We're going to go in there. Zero chance. You know, like the captain or whoever, the DA is like, I don't know. I'm 50-50 on this. He's like, I promise you, if we go in there, we will find something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, boss, liquid nitrogen.
Yeah, that's it. What is this?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fire extinguisher.
What? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry I don't have a HAZMAT plan.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, I guess those things, I'm not, I don't mean to speak poorly, I mean to speak comedically, but, you know, I think some of those things are there for good reason.
I you know, I've mentioned on this show a lot is that as much as I hate the DOB, I definitely don't hate the fire department. I love the fucking fire department a million times over, but as much as I that on a moment's notice, I hate the health department, the DOB. It's like, listen, it's New York City. And do you really want loose rules when it comes to, like, people cooking? Do you really want loose rules when it comes to, like, people building structures next to your apartment? I mean, you know what happened in fucking, you know, West Side, that fucking building exploding. But it's just like, you know, every time I see these rules, it's just like, man, especially the health department, if you don't have these strict rules, these people are going to, you know, people are going to open up and people will die.
Yeah.
You know, think about how gross it would be if there weren't so many strict rules. And it's already pretty gross anyways in some places. So.
Yeah, it's very true.
Yeah. You know, I was talking about, like, you know, my memories of your restaurant, and it was so exciting to me. I was so busy with Momo that I didn't even eat there for the first, like, I want to say almost a year. I was always on my list of things to do, you know, but when I finally made it over there, I was so excited about your food because it kind of, like, you know, I don't think you were calling it molecular gastronomy,
yeah.
But it was like, it was so exciting in the way that, like, you know, you go to these molecular gastronomy places and they're good and they're kind of fun. But at the end of the day, it's not like really like, you know, eating. It's more of like an experiment with what you can do with food. Mm-hmm. And what I liked about your thing is that it was so accessible. Everything that I ate there was fun and exciting and new. And but using like, you know, kind of cutting edge techniques, in my opinion, too. Which, you know,
thanks, man.
It really inspired me when I ate there. So I remember there was the Caesar salad with the ponzu jelly, I believe.
Yeah.
And then there was some sort of, there was something else on there. What was that?
Gosh, that was an old guy, but I mean, the main thing was like the Caesar salad was grilled. And,
exactly, it was grilled.
Yeah, and but it was the whole head of romaine, so you had to like kind of chop it up yourself. Yeah. And but yeah, I don't know that. To be honest, that dish, I saw a riff of it at one of the first restaurants I worked in. It was called Rococo. It was in Hagerstown, Maryland, and that was called Champagne Tony's Caesar.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and it was crazy because like. I mean, this is in, like, Appalachia, you know, a very rural part in Maryland, and people, like, see the Caesar salad comes out, and it's, like, a whole uncut thing of lettuce.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And so, I mean, gosh, that must have been 10 years before I put it on the restaurant at Do or Die, and people were totally into it.
Okay, you know what? On that Caesar salad note, we're going to take a little break and be back, right back with Justin Warner.
Ooh. If I come and draw 20 hidden reps like this, all you superficial rappers will cease to exist. If I come and draw 20 hidden reps like this, all you superficial rappers will cease to exist. If I come and draw 20 hidden reps like this, all you superficial rappers will cease to exist. If I come and draw 20 hidden reps like this, all you superficial rappers will cease to exist.
Hi, this is Dave Arnold from Cooking Issues, and I'm here to talk to you about the Museum of Food and Drink, which is finally getting a brick-and-mortar space right here in Brooklyn, New York. So the Museum of Food and Drink is opening the MOFAD Lab, our first laboratory and gallery space, where we will be putting on an exhibition called Making It or Faking It, the history of the flavor industry. And it tackles a very important topic, which is how the food system got to be the way it is now as a result of the intervention of the flavor industry, how that happened. Get your tickets at tickets.mofad.org to come see the first exhibit ever of the Museum of Food and Drink at the MOFAD Lab, brought to you by Infinity on 62 Bayard Street.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Culture City, a for-purpose organization that provides a place of acceptance and support for all autism families. This is Culture City's founder, Julian Maha.
Culture City was really born out of necessity. You know, it was born when my, currently six-year-old boy was diagnosed with autism. His name is Abram and he's nonverbal. And even though my wife and I were both physicians at the time, it was really hard for us to find any resources at that point to help him. All the other organizations out there that we know of, they do phenomenal work, but their main focus is basically finding a cure for autism. Our main focus is basically trying to prepare the community to accept not only children with autism, but their families as well. You know, in addition to that, we also want to provide help to these families in the here and now. You know, so tangible things like, you know, iPads for nonverbal kids, you know, financial scholarships, therapy scholarships, you know, art camps and also some lecture series that can teach parents about, you know, dietary issues, you know, how to financially plan and things like that.
For more information, visit culturecity.org.
Hi, welcome back. This is The Main Course without Patrick Martins. I'm in studio with Justin Warner, and on break we were talking about the situation where when you own a restaurant and you're you know, in the restaurant industry and you own your own restaurant, when people ask how many hours a week you work, the answer is all of them.
Yes, that is true.
Yes, there's you work 14 hours a day, and then you have about 10 hours to get home, clean up, go to sleep, and then that whole 10 hours you're thinking about what you have to do the next day and what went wrong today. So if you know somebody that owns a restaurant, don't ask a stupid question of how many hours a week do they work.
Yeah, it's everybody says, Justin, you're always on, and I'm like, yeah, on the clock.
Yeah, exactly. If you know somebody that owns 40 restaurants, you can assume that they don't work any a week.
Exactly. They're just relaxing. They're on a beach somewhere. You will know them by their sunny Instagram.
So next on the main course, we're going to talk about how Justin Warner went from having automatic weapons pointed at him to being on the Food Network.
That's a great segue because one is actually directly responsible for the other.
Yep. Is that true?
It is very true.
Ooh, I'm intuitive this morning, man.
Yeah, you're really on it. So we were cited for operating an unlicensed bottle club for having BYOB in a restaurant with more than 17 seats.
Yeah.
Which is bad. We knew that we were breaking the law, but in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, when nothing else is going on, a restaurant without booze sounds about as fun as, well, a restaurant without booze.
Yeah.
Not fun. So we knew what we were doing, and we knew we were going to get in trouble. it was like in Grand Theft Auto, like we just kind of shut down for a couple days to let the heat die down, you know? And during those 4 days, I put everything into this place. I was like subletting my girlfriend's bed, just like in exchange for cuddles because I didn't have money. And so like she got up and went to work.
That could really be taken out of context. I think that sounds like I don't know what that sounds like.
That's okay. But yeah, basically she was letting me stay in her bed and I would cuddle with her. And then she would get up and go to her real job, which is also at the Modern, but I had quit. And so she was really the only breadwinner in the relationship, and I was pretty much a bum. And I was feeling very sorry for myself.
With a newsworthy restaurant, by the way.
Yeah, but I thought that the restaurant was dead. I thought we would close, because if we weren't going to have a liquor license, well, I mean, you could pretty much kiss the fun and excitement goodbye. Exactly. You know, certain food just commands lubricant, you know, liquor, and we were it. So I was nervous, and then the phone rings. And I'm thinking, great, it's bill collector, or it's someone from the state liquor authority, or something like that. But like, lo and behold, it's someone from the same casting company that did the first little show that I was on. And they're like, hey, do you want to try out for Food Network Star? And I'm like, yes. and they're like, all right, well, you need to show up here tomorrow at this time. You better have a demo prepared. And I'm like, demo? Like, shit, man. I've been cooking for like exactly 1.5 months.
Yeah.
Aside from another reality show I was on. What the hell am I going to demo? Like, I barely know how to like skin a fish.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, what do I do really good at that restaurant? Better than anyone else. And it's peel hard-boiled eggs.
Yeah.
So I show up with one egg. And like, cue the Eminem of 1 mile. What is that thing called?
Yeah. Dun, dun,
dun, yeah. 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 8 mile soundtrack. That's it. And so I have one egg and one shot and to be able to peel this egg perfectly and show them how to do it. And so here's a clue though. I mean, if you really want to know how to take the shell off of an egg, when you see the shell, remove it. There is no method.
Yeah.
But I just kind of BS'd my way that there was method.
Baking soda.
Right, yeah. So I, boom, I crack it, and that shell came off there like, I don't know, like a
two pieces.
Yeah, it was one. It was beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like a smoking jacket just falling off of someone. It was gorgeous. And like the person, even behind the camera, was like, I just kind of just saw their jaw drop a little. Yeah. I was like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I can peel eggs. What else can I do?
Yeah,
and I'm like, I don't know really that much about cooking yet, but so I get on the show and I don't know. I just kind of played the game in order to win it, and I learned a lot about myself on it. And we were in isolation for the vast majority of it, and so you actually have to to win a show like that, you really have to achieve this like sort of monastic sense of self.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah. That was like in the first like 6 months of Momo, I kind of had to come to a point where you really have to objectify yourself. Mm. You have to know, like in the restaurant business, but I'm sure it's the same with the show. Like if you don't know your own weaknesses and what you're bad at and know what you're good at objectively, not your ego, but like what's actually true in people's perception of you and what you can actually do. Yeah. So that's kind of genius.
Yeah. It was, it was difficult. I mean, when you're like, this is basically how like an average day on that show would go. All right, you've slept maybe at a max 6 hours. LED lights come on above your bed. There's a camera in your face.
What time?
Generally like 5:30 a.m.
A.m.?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, well, the problem is you have like, you know...
There's like a compound or...
Yeah, you're in a compound and you have like 12 people that all have to get ready and there are two bathrooms.
Yeah.
So this takes forever. You know, I would always deal that like I'd make dinner for somebody and then I'd be the last person or whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you have to get everybody ready. Then you do what they call morning reality. And morning reality is where you talk about your feels, how you feel going into the day. What's it going to be like? You know, I don't know. Who are you nervous about? Who are you not nervous about? Okay, boom. Then we sit around for an hour waiting for everybody to get loaded up in vans. And vans, you go to wherever the set is. Let's just say we were in Miami. We're at a beach.
Yeah.
And then you stand around. You stand around. Everybody's getting cameras repositioned or whatever. Boom, Paula Deen shows up, big reaction. Hey, Paula Deen. Paula Deen says, okay, I'm having a party for all of my friends and their kids. Yeah. And you're like, uh-oh. And then you're like, all right, explain rules. Rules. You're going to have to make 200 portions of soup of whatever. I chose soup because if you're making 200 portions, yeah. Soup. You're going to make 200 portions for Paula Deen and 200 portions for the kids. So your dish has to have two versions. Does everybody understand the rules? Rules. Great. Wait an hour. Go shopping. Shop for an hour. And then go back, cook your brains out. And like you have literally an hour and a half. When they say the clock is XYZ long, it really is.
Yeah.
An hour and a half to make 400 portions of something.
Yeah. Wow. Vitamix.
Yeah, Vitamix. Exactly. That's why I did soup. Everybody's like doing chicken wings and like meatballs. I'm like, forget it, man. Like, you don't want to have to physically assemble 200 of everything. You're going to waste more time counting than you are.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I was like, give me 200 bowls and I'll divide it. If that means they get an ounce of soup, I don't care.
Yeah.
Best soup they ever had.
Yeah. Amazing.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
So then you serve the stuff. You wait around for a little bit. And then you get judged.
So I think there's been a few incarnations of the show. Who were the judges when you were on?
The judges, let's see, were Susie Fogelson and Bob Tushman. And then we had mentors. Mine was Alton Brown. There was also Bobby Flay and Jada De Laurentiis. And that was an interesting season because I was the only one.
Oh, and then Paula Deen was just a guest.
Yeah, she was like a guest judge. And so she would like weigh
Wasn't
in.
Wasn't she one of the mentors 1 year? No.
Maybe not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
So I choked Paula Deen with chipotle oil.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But she thought I looked like Elvis, so everything was fine.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Mr. Brown, he took you under his wing.
Yeah, it's my dude, man. I love that guy. We are like, I mean, he put out a tweet the other day when my book came out, and he said, congratulations, I've never been prouder of my spirit son.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. He's always been my favorite, man. He's just like, obviously he's a savvy businessman. Obviously he's a savvy showman. But besides that, there's just something about him that you can tell that he has so much integrity and he's a decent human being.
Yeah.
I really, I've been watching Good Eats since it premiered and I still probably, I've seen every episode of Good Eats and I still probably once a year go on like a little binge of my favorite episodes. And his nephew and I love it. So that was, what year was that?
That was 2012.
2012, yeah.
13, 14, 15.
Something
like that, yeah.
So from then until now, I suspect you've done some pretty interesting traveling.
Yeah, yeah. I went all around the South for a show I did called Rebel Eats. I've been back and forth between both coasts.
Did you get outside of the country at all?
Have I? No. I went to Canada. Actually, I went to Toronto.
Yeah.
Amazing food city. Best pho I've ever had was in Toronto.
Really?
Yeah. Can you believe it?
Well, it's a large community up there, I guess, huh?
Yeah. And this place was just like very divey, but very excellent. And my, like, I have this like pho, like request metric where I'm like, first off, I'll say I'll have the number one. And the number one at a great pho restaurant is always their best house pho. Yeah. It's only served in one size.
Yeah.
And it has the everything. And then I always ask for a side of beef fat. Mm-hmm. And if they have that, they're very legit.
Yeah.
Because like to make a good pho broth, you're going to have all this like leftover beef fat that you're like skimming off.
Yeah.
And they'll serve it on the side for you to like dip in during the winter. And then it is, it's bananas.
Wow.
Yeah.
We were just talking about that you came to Moku Moku. I can't tell you enough about. I'm so excited. We're going to launch a dish in about a week and a half. But do you know Chonko Nabe? It's actually what the sumo wrestlers eat.
Is like pot.
Yeah, and so Chonko Nabe is what they serve sumo wrestlers. It's like 12,000 calories, and it's the super traditional one is like seafood, chicken stock, cabbage, mushrooms, tofu, and chicken meatballs. Huh. And so we're doing a version of it when we're going to serve a half of a goose.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, and so we're going to do like roasted drumstick, the breast and thigh meat sliced up, and then we're going to do on the side fried goose wing.
Wow.
But a goose wing is one goose wing is probably three times longer than a chicken wing.
Yeah, because of the paddle, they got to fly.
Yeah, and then we're serving it with the udon on the side and then like, kanzuri and yuzu kosho. And I just, I'm so sorry. Not to go back to my restaurant, but you just reminded me of how good it is.
No, it sounds delicious. But, it sounds perfect for the season.
Man, I love like hot Asian soups.
Yeah, hot Asian soups, dude. I don't even get me started. People ask me like, what do you eat a lot? And I'm like, noodles. Like, what do you mean noodles? Like pasta? I'm like, nope, hot Asian soups.
Yeah,
I'm into it.
Are there any ingredients that in the last couple of years that you've discovered that you're just so psyched about?
Whew, that's. Shirodashi.
Shirodashi.
Yeah, it's like, to quote my good friend Nick Subic of King Noodle around the way here, he says it's liquid ham.
Yeah,
liquid ham. Shirodashi is good. I forget the name of it, but there's a mushroom seasoning granule that is Vietnamese that I'm really into. It's really good for making vegetarian stuff delicious. You can also just pulverize it, and it's basically mushroom salt.
Wow.
That is super good. I forget the name of it. If you just Google Vietnamese mushroom seasoning. Seems like there's some other things as of late. Yeah, you know, I don't know. After writing the cookbook, which I designed for home cooks, I found that I just kind of got re-obsessed with a lot of very traditional things that you would find in your average household.
Yeah.
You know, here in New York, I think we spend a lot of our time trying to be different and discover and cater to people that are just saturated. But I don't know. Like the other day, I went to this kind of just like, okay place in the west side of the city. And it was all right, wine bar. And then they just had an arugula salad with lemon and pecorino. And I was like, I'll have three of those. They're like, what? Yeah, I want three of them. That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, little things like that. Like,
well, you know what's so funny? I was previewing your book, and you know, some of the recipes are great, but you know, also kind of like, I'm kind of done with the cookbooks. That you buy these cookbooks and then you're going through them and then you're like, okay, I want to make this dish. Okay, I'm going to have to spend $300 to make dinner for four people because each little thing, you know, if you don't have it in your pantry. So I think you know, the cookbook is all, you know, really uniquely accessible, which is a lot of new cookbooks aren't.
Yeah, we tried. I wanted this book to be a kitchen book, not a coffee table book.
Yeah.
And, or actually, I wanted it to be a little bit of both. You know, mostly, though, I wanted people to cook with it. And so when an ingredient is weird, we always give an easy substitution of something that you might have. Or like, you know, like, look, if we're making ramen noodles, I want people to understand that there is a thing called kansui that they can put in the ramen noodles to make them more traditional.
Yeah.
But that being said, like, I also say, hey, look, make this broth and put biscotti in it. You know, like, I don't care. Like, and you shouldn't care either. Like, the fact that you're making any effort in your kitchen is, like, worthy. Yeah. So cheat where you can, please.
So where is the book accessible? Available on all the normal outlets?
Yeah. Generally, if you have a favorite book retailer, whatever that may be, they will be carrying it. And kitchen stores and whatnot are into it. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, there's some clothing stores that are selling it.
Really?
Kind of
like,
weird.
Like, yeah. Urban Outfitters?
Or? I don't want to mention any store specifically by name, but of clothing stores that sell books, that could be one of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome. So what are your future plans?
That's a great question. The book is doing well, and I was just walking out of the elevator of the publisher the other day, and they said, well, you know, after the first of the year, we'll want to talk about what's next. And so I'm like, okay, well, so there's that. The cool thing about cookbooks is that you can kind of make them. It's like just like making an album.
Yeah.
You can really just go into hibernation,
yeah,
and put your brain into this and really just let it explode.
Yeah.
And it feels good. It feels a lot better than the creative process, in my opinion, in a restaurant, because you're just kind of playing handball with yourself. You know, if you're the kind of person that can play like a cell phone game where it's just you against yourself and you can play to like the infinite level,
yeah,
that's like what making a cookbook is. I feel like making food in a restaurant is more like a team-based strategy game,
yeah,
where you're really only as strong as your weakest link.
Yeah.
So I love making cookbooks. I'd like to continue doing that. I'm working on the second season of my web show, Foodie Call.
Nice.
Which is killing it. People are just going bananas for that, which is really fun. And, you know, I don't know. I'll probably get back into the restaurant game sooner or later.
Call me.
Yeah, probably later. I will.
I'm going to re-listen to this episode, and I think that was your fifth video game reference.
Yeah,
yeah. For those of you who don't know, he's a video game player.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I mean, you have to. I don't know. I'm into video games and Lego. People ask me, why do you always reference that? And I'm like, well, because in this world, you have to control something.
Yeah, right.
Think about it. There's a reason that they call them controllers.
Everything is awesome.
Yeah, dude. I'm totally into it.
Part of a team.
It's nice to have a set of instructions.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I love it.
If I had one of those for the restaurant, it wouldn't be closed right now. You know.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
On a scale from 1 to 100, how excited are you for December 17th, Star Wars?
Like 110, 120. That last trailer really like put me over the top, gave me the feels. I wept.
Yeah. I haven't cried. I've cried 3 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Teared up.
Can you feel it?
Yeah.
I can't wait. Like when, if Duradine is ever reborn,
yeah,
I still have the Twitter,
yeah,
and I'm not going to give it to anyone. And so if Duradine is ever reborn, I'm just going to make a single tweet that says, can you feel it?
but you know what I went crazy about is Han Solo kind of being like, yeah, it's fucking real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, no, he didn't, because he's always the skeptic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. hokey religions and an ancient weapon.
You guys do yourself a favor and get online right now and buy The Laws of Cooking and How to Break Them.
Yeah.
Justin Warner, it is absolutely my honor to have you on this show, and it's so good to see you, man, and congratulations again.
Phil, knowing you is a treat.
Aww. Well, happy Sunday.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.